From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour looks at the power of a fence. Good fences make good neighbors, it's been said, sometimes, sarcastically. But a fence might also make us curious to know what is on the other side. What is life like on the other side? It's the starting point for our dialogue on disability this week as we explore and celebrate our differences as people. This hour, we look at the goal of creating a more inclusive world. Should your kids be going to school with kids who have disabilities or special needs? Is it a zero-sum game, or is there a benefit to everyone when we improve the opportunities for kids with differing abilities? And what programs are available in the community that you might not know about? Lots of experiences to share with you this hour, and we want to tell you that today's Connections is part of Dialogue on Disability Week. It's a partnership between WXXI and the Al Siegel Community of Agencies in conjunction with the Herman and Margaret Schwartz Community Series. Dialogue on Disability is supported in part by the Golisano Foundation, with additional support from the Fred L. Emerson Foundation. My guests start with a mom. Suzanne Lewandowski is here. Her daughter, Grace, almost 5 years old, attends CP Rochester's Augustine Children's Center. And Suzanne, it's great to have you in studio. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. Thanks for having me.
And we should also say, Grace looks like she is happy next door. So
yes, she is.
She's well cared for. Thumbs up from everyone there. Karen Terp is here. She's a physical therapist at CP Rochester. Karen, thank you for being here.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
And also here is Steve Pello. Steve's the founder of the Kids Miracle Making Club, and that's a community group that pairs children of all abilities for activities and workshops while also hosting fundraising events to benefit programs serving kids with special needs. Steve, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
I have to ask Steve right off the bat. We were joking in the break that it's called the Kids Miracle Making Club, and I said, how many times does somebody say to you, oh, is that like Make-A-Wish Foundation?
Many, many times.
Oh, probably many all times. The time. you founded the club in 2007?
2007, yes. That's the year we founded it.
And what's the goal?
And just so explain a little bit about the club.
Yeah.
It's all about learning, hands-on learning. So what we do is we help kids ages 5 through 12 develop their academic skills and natural talents by taking them out into the real world and doing projects. Now, the projects are focused specifically on making a better community. What makes us unique, this process that I've just mentioned is called service learning. What makes us unique is all our club members' projects focus on enhancing the lives of kids with special needs. So what our club members do, they come up with these projects, they raise funds to buy products and services for the kids that they help. They try to drive a community awareness of kids with special needs. And the most important and most rewarding portion of it is they look for any and all ways to find inclusion opportunities with the kids that they help.
So 5 to 12 years old. It's a great idea. And I know your club supports primarily Golisano Children's Hospital, also Mary Cariola Children's Center, CP Rochester, who's here today. One more?
Holy Child.
And Holy Childhood. And give me an example of the kind of project we're talking about.
One of the best we had was with CP Rochester. My son, who was in the club, he was 8 years old at the time, and we said, well, we always ask the kids, what do you like to do? What do you really enjoy? So we're really trying to tap into their natural talents, and he said, I like video games. Okay. Which video games do you like? I like the Wii. So we started this project all about the Wii, and the idea was, how do you learn more about this? In the research, we found that the Wii is used for physical therapy for the kids at CP Rochester. We took the kids up to RIT in the School of Interactive Games and Media, so they learned about how video games were used. And then we partnered with the Rochester Raiders football team, and the kids raised over $1,000 and bought Wii systems for CP Rochester and the other organizations. But the best part of it was the inclusion portion. We had the kids called it the Wii Fest. So we got over at the gym over at CP Rochester. All the kids got together and played the Wii. And it was just a great, great inclusion opportunity. After that, we had biweekly meetings with the kids just to play the games. I have to say, I played with Darcy over at CP Rochester, the bowling on the Wii. And she just destroyed me. I think she beat me by at least 50 pins.
It's such a good idea in general that, you know, I think of my own son, and you're going to hear a term sort of typically developing for a child. My son, I guess, is typically developing. And sometimes as parents, you want to make sure that a child understands there are differences, culturally, economically, race, all kinds of other things, because it's easy to sort of put your head down and grow up in a little bit of a bubble. It sounds to me like what you're doing, taking 5 to 12-year-olds, you take their skills and their talents, but it also opens them up to this world, sort of looking at the other side of the fence that they might not have seen before.
Exactly, exactly. The whole idea is, first you want to develop the confidence in the child. What do they feel good about? Mm-hmm. And that's why we focus on asking them, what do you really enjoy? What do you like to do? And once you do that, we help develop that, but now we share that with other kids, and they just get so much out of that sharing opportunity. Now you can imagine kids that enjoy doing video games. They might be the next designer of the video games, but when they're thinking about, what do I do with this that I've been able to do, now I can go back in the community and help other kids or help other families, anyone with special needs. So it's a complete mindset that we're trying to develop with the kids that has been very, very rewarding for us.
And so, Steve, if someone is listening and there's a child in their family, 5 to 12, and you're thinking, I'd love for them to get involved with this, what's the process? How do they get
just,
involved?
Just give us a call, and our phone number is 585-749-7515, or they can go to our website and go to info@kmmclub.org.
KMMClub.org?
That's our acronym, Kids Miracle Making Club, KMMClub.org.
It's such a neat idea. And before I turn the conversation to the rest of the panel, let me also ask you, Steve, 2007, what got in your head to start this? How did this? What's the backstory?
It's always this. I had a friend at Galisano's Children's Hospital. He had a major problem there and ended up passing away. Mm-hmm. And while I was visiting him at the hospital, I was walking through and watching the telethon and radiothon that they'd put on. And I'm an older dad. I had my first son when I was 46. And it was just a matter of giving back. You know, it's you're blessed with kids. How do you give back to the community? How do you get your kids into a mindset where they're able to give back? And it just sparked this idea of let's get the kids involved in doing something for their community and making them feel good about themselves.
Any idea how many kids you're working with a year?
Over 50 kids in our mm-hmm. program. Different projects, all kinds of different interests. They just love doing it.
It's a beautiful idea. And again, we talked about the notion of the other side of the fence. I also want to tell you, as part of Dialogue on Disability Week, tomorrow night at the Little Theater at 6:30, they're going to be screening a film called The Other Side of the Fence. And the director is going to be there, and they're going to be talking about it. If you go to WXXI.org, you can see the trailer for the film. And it touches on a lot of these themes, these beautiful ideas of our differences and celebrating them and understanding. And the film looks great. Tomorrow night, 6:30 at the Little, director's going to be there, as they often are, to talk about it, and we can build on that theme. But as you heard Steve Pello mention, the Kids Miracle Making Club benefits and works with a number of these groups, including CP Rochester. So Karen Terp, you're a physical therapist at CP Rochester. For our community who's never even heard of you or haven't been there, what is CP Rochester?
CP Rochester is an organization that serves people with disabilities, differently abled, and children in our preschool that are typically developing. I mainly work in the preschool. The preschool is 3 and 4-year-olds who we're helping all of them reach their potential, whether it's to go into a regular kindergarten class when they get to that age, or whether they're going to continuing on just in a special education class or all things in between. Each of our preschool classes has 6 or 7 kids that are typically developing and 6 or 7 kids that have special needs. We have a special education teacher that teaches each of the classes, and we have physical therapy, occupational therapy, speech pathology, and music therapy that if the kids are deemed to need these services, then we can provide them right there. We have a gym. We have a 94-degree pool that the preschool classes get in. We have an adaptive PE person who works on swimming with the children.
So you've got a lot going on there.
We do.
And Suzanne Lewandowski's daughter Grace attends CP Rochester's Augustine Children's Center. Tell me a little bit about Grace.
Well, this is her second year in preschool, so she went to the three-year-old program and is now finishing up her four-year-old program. She, if you could see her, when we just drive into the parking lot, she is just about ready to jump out of her seat. She's so excited to be there. She absolutely loves interacting with the other kids. What's unique about Grace is that she's currently nonverbal, so she uses gestures, she uses picture symbols, she uses the iPad to help her get her communication needs addressed. But that doesn't seem to make a difference with the other kids. I've had other kids, some typically developing kids, come up to me when I go in and drop her off and get her settled in, and they say, "Grace's mom, you got to go over to the babies area. Gracie loves to feed babies." And it's like, well, how do you know that? But they just, it's almost intuitive when these kids get together that they just know what each other enjoys, and it's wonderful to see.
Now, she's almost five, and can you walk me through your sort of the stages as a parent that you went through and sort of understanding what different abilities Grace had and finding the right place, and walk me through that a little bit.
Sure. Yeah. Well, Grace has some pretty significant needs. She's currently learning how to walk with the assistance of a walker, and she's made tremendous strides, again, thanks to the help of, mm-hmm. of the physical therapists at CP Rochester. We were introduced to CP Rochester actually through the early intervention program. Grace was able to go to their physical therapy program in that pool, actually with Karen. And while we were there, I would sit alongside the pool, and there would also be, while Karen was working on physical therapy with Grace, there would be preschoolers in the pool having a blast. So, you know, I got to see the interaction of not only the kids together, but also, you know, all of the adult facilitation of how these children interact. And so I got to have a sneak peek before I sent her there, which was really nice.
For parents of children with special needs or developing abilities, other challenges, there can be a process of trying to understand what the best services and resources are that are available in the community, but also trying to ascertain what environment of learning is best for them. You know, Sometimes parents are not that comfortable with their kids in sort of in an integrated system with typically developing kids. Often, though, parents do want that interaction. And you have another daughter at home. Mm-hmm. So what did you see early on that told you what you wanted for Grace?
Well, I guess because her older sister is typically developing, mm-hmm. she got to be exposed to lots of regular activities where, you know, I would take her to story time at the library. I'd take her to the local Museum of Play. And I just see her as a little girl that wants to have fun. And so I don't really think it's in her best interest to limit her exposure to children of all different abilities, both Sarah and Grace, actually.
How is Sarah with her?
Oh, Sarah's awesome. She's like a little mommy. She's wonderful.
She's how much older?
She is 4.5 years older.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And amazing how kids step up.
Oh, yeah. It truly is. And the empathy that she has, it's amazing to watch.
Did you have consternation about putting Grace into that system with kids? You know Sarah, she's your daughter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't exactly know what other typically developing children are going to be like around Grace. Did you have any consternation when that process was happening?
I had my fears here and there, but when we even go to the store, there are little ones that are curious. They don't have exposure to children with special needs. So sometimes when I see a little one kind of staring at Grace walking in her walker, mm-hmm. I'll go up to them, obviously with her parent next to them, and say, are you wondering why she's using this? And they'll shake their head, mm-hmm. yes. Mm-hmm. And I'll explain, well, she's learning how to walk, and this is helping her. And they're like, oh, okay, you know, and that's it. There's some of her equipment that help her walk. They actually look like toys. There's something called a Bronco, and it's got these big wheels on it that will go to Stokey Farms in the fall, and she's able to get around on rugged terrain with this fun piece of equipment. And we'll walk by, and kids will be like, Mommy, I want one of those. So, you know, it's just, I think exposure is important.
Do we underestimate kids and their ability to, especially typically developing kids, to understand differences and even embrace and help with it?
I do think it's underestimated. I think we worry a little bit too much about negative responses, and I think it's a great learning opportunity for them.
I assume you've seen some negative responses occasionally.
Yeah, sometimes. But again, I
don't mean commonly, but I mean there has to be in 5 years.
I have had some experiences where kids just, they don't understand why a certain thing happens. And again, I think it's important to teach them.
Yeah, you take that as a learning experience, learning opportunity.
Yes.
I admire that so much. I mean, because you may take that, what's in that moment may seem different and it's a negative moment, and you turn it into an understanding, and all of a sudden, you know, you've broken down a barrier.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's great. And I see, Karen, you're nodding over there. I mean, I think Suzanne's experience and Grace's experience does remind us that we can underestimate kids at our own peril, that they really are capable of sort of linking arms and working with each other.
Oh, definitely. And one of our main concerns at CP Rochester is that we don't have enough typically developing kids to fill up our classes. So some of our classes aren't full because we need more typically developing kids in there. And I think exposure, especially exposure at an early age to kids that are different, helps both kids, the kids with the special needs and the kids that are typically developing, and it does break down any kind of barriers that older people may have, and makes it natural, mm-hmm. that this child that may look different or walk in a walker like Grace does is really not different from me, or maybe uses a communication device, is not different.
We're talking to a panel of folks as we begin our dialogue on disability this week. It's a partnership between WXXI and the Al Siegel Community of Agencies in conjunction with the Herman and Margaret Schwartz Community Series. And the dialogue on disability is supported in part by the Golisano Foundation, with additional support from the Fred L. Emerson Foundation. We're talking about, we're talking to Steve Pello, the founder of the Kids Miracle Making Club, Karen Terp, a physical therapist at CP Rochester, and Suzanne Lewandowski, whose daughter Grace attends CP Rochester's Augustine Children's Center. And I want to revisit a question that I partially opened the hour with, and I'll ask all of our panel members this. You know, Karen, you're talking about the fact that CP Rochester, you need more typically developing children. And but sometimes parents think, well, this is a zero-sum game, that if a setting like we find at CP Rochester is good for someone like Grace, for example, that it improves her situation, but other kids who might be in an environment that is exclusively typically developing as opposed to more integrated, does it bring down their experience? And I always thought that was sort of a false choice, that it's not a zero-sum game. But let me start with you. What do you see, and what are the benefits for typically developing children to be in an integrative environment?
Well, academically, pre-academically, actually, we are one of the sites for the Henrietta Universal Pre-Kindergarten Program. So we get children who have the ability to go to kindergarten ready to go to kindergarten, just as any other preschool does. We have kids with that aren't typically developing that may still, with our pre-academic setting, be able to go into kindergarten because we do the pre-academics. Kids that are going to be going into a special education program, we sometimes do things in smaller groups, sometimes individually, and that's how each of the kids get their pre-academic needs met. But we also do circle time, music time, gym, swim, snack, everything like that in a large group so that the kids all get to interact with each other. So it's really the best of both worlds.
Let me ask the parent then, the benefits you see for all the kids involved in that kind of integrated environment.
Oh gosh, if there were a preschool like CP Rochester closer to where we live, I would have had Sarah in it in a heartbeat. What kind of preschool actually allows kids to go swimming as part of their program? How awesome is that? Number one, right?
Right.
But besides that, I actually have friends that their three daughters who are now either graduated or one's still in college who attended an integrated preschool program when they were little. Their mom has been a kindergarten teacher for over 25 years, and they all, now that they're older, the oldest is a nurse at Strong. The second is a special educator, and the third is also in nursing school. So they've all chosen these lives of service that just kind of ties in with that compassion that they kind of learn throughout the years. And I think it starts in preschool.
Mm-hmm. And let me ask Steve Pello the same kind of question. We touched on that, but you see it all the time through what you do with your club in terms of integrating.
Yes, I do. And I wanted to back up on a comment you made about kids understanding it, underestimating that. I really don't see it as underestimating. I think it's something that the kids do naturally, but they don't have the same perception as we do. They just naturally develop it. I remember when my four-year-old, we went over friends who had two boys had autism, and one did not speak. So he came running into a room while we're talking to the parents, and he says, "Mom and Dad, this is Jack. Jack doesn't speak. I'm going to go outside and go on the trampoline. It's all right for us to do that." He didn't think anything about the autism or anything about a disability. It just came naturally to him. And I think you also have to look at the educational portion of it. It's just not the typical learning your ABCs. This is social and emotional learning that you're getting from this. And when our kids walk away, they're just not walking away with education on what we think of as typical learning. They're learning how to interact with kids. It's all character building at a very, very young age.
Mm-hmm. And you've, again, 5 to 12 are the kids, if you're just joining us, the kids who are involved with the Kids Miracle Making Club that you can find online at kmmclub.org. Is that right?
Correct.
Steve Pello, the founder, 5 to 12 years old, you've probably heard some wonderful head-spinning comments from kids that you could see the difference.
Definitely. We have stories, again, over at CP Rochester. We had a little activity where the kids were doing arts and crafts, and my five-year-old son at the time comes up to me. He's got a little beaded bracelet for me. He says, "I love you, Daddy." And I said, "This is great. How did you know how to do that?" He goes, "I went over to Lauren. Lauren helped me out." Lauren had cerebral palsy. She was there, nonverbal, but he didn't sense that. All he did was, "Here's somebody that can help me." She helped him out. And they see each other now 4 or 5 years later, and they're good friends.
We're going to be bringing a couple other guests on this program in the second half hour. But before we get there, let me start to wrap the first half hour on an important question of empathy. And I want to start with you on this question, Steve. My son's not three yet. My father-in-law had a hip replacement last week, and he's doing great. He's home. But, you know, doing great's a relative term when you've had a hip replacement, so he's moving a little slow. And my son said to my wife and I, he said, "I want to go help Grandpa walk." You know, and he knows you've got to be a little slow around him, no quick movements, be careful with the walker for a while. And I don't know that he's perfectly experiencing empathy, but I mean, he's not three yet. But I do know that the more you put him in situations where he could tell someone has a different kind of a need or is not, for lack of a better term, typically developing, he does want to seek out ways to help. And I've read that we should as parents seek to develop gratitude and empathy. And I would guess your club is really well geared to that.
Yes. And I want to address that specific example. One of the things we're blessed here with the area, we have technology being developed right here at RIT through the biomedical technology group. in addressing these things. We talked about Grace and Sarah with the iPad. They're able to communicate on that. So when our kids see these types of things, what we do is we sit down and say, okay, what's the solution for that? How can we help on that? And they start using their creativity and their own talents to try to figure out how to do that. There's the empathy there, but at the same time, it's more of a, I have a problem. My friend has a challenge. How do I help? And again, there's so many resources here in our community to work on that and help us out on that.
Karen, what do you see when it comes to kids developing empathy?
I wanted to tell you a story of one boy that we had in our preschool that in his three-year-old year, he was cognitively normal but had a physical disability, went to a regular preschool where he was the only child that walked with a walker. Mm-hmm. And his self-esteem kind of plummeted. And in his four-year-old year, his parents decided to send him to our integrated preschool. And there were other kids there that needed his help. And mom said every day he would come home and say, I helped so-and-so do this. I helped so-and-so do that. And his self-esteem just really went up because there were other kids there that he could help. He just didn't need all the help. And I think kids just figure this out. And it's nice to be in a place, whether you have special needs or are typically developing, where this just happens naturally. It's not forced.
That's a great story. Suzanne, before I go to break, what do you think about empathy in kids? And maybe you've seen it in your own family with your daughters or among their classmates.
I have seen it in her classmates as well as my own family, but I'll share a couple of stories with you as well. I went to pick her up one day, and the teacher had told me about how the girls were playing dress up, and they had Grace sit in the center on a chair, and they dressed her up right along with them, and she was just beaming with pride. She just absolutely loved it and loved being involved with the other kids. And there was another situation where they buddied up Grace along with one of her friends to go get their photos taken for picture day, and the other little girl just kept encouraging Grace to walk down the hallway. Just, come on, Gracie, come on, you can do it. And just it was just amazing to watch how supportive little ones can be towards one another.
And invested, you know, when they see her brighten up, they experience that excitement.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's really great to hear. Our guest talking about the value of integration and really the remarkable services that are here. We're going to take a short break, but let me wrap up with Steve Pello, the founder of the Kids Miracle Making Club. Again, if parents want to get involved or just want to learn more, they can go where?
They can go to our website. It's www.kmmclub.org. Probably best just to give us a call at 585-749-7515.
What kind of time investment are we talking about for a kid who's involved?
We have weekly meetings for the kids that want to participate in projects. We also have special events. If I know that parents have a lot going on with sports and other activities, we have special events that we run with the club, all inclusion opportunities.
Well, congrats on coming up on 8 years the club, and it really sounds like you're helping kids see the difference they can make, and that's really exciting.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for taking the time. Short break, and more on the conversation here as we talk about, first day in our dialogue on disability. I'm Evan Dawson, and we're going to be right back right here on member-supported public radio. I'm Evan Dawson. Tuesday on The Next Connections, we look at juice cleanses. It's January. The holidays are over. You might be cleansing, or you might hear about new deals for cleansing, but do they work? Are they really taking toxins out of our body? Is there a better way to aim for a new kind of diet? That discussion, first hour. Second hour, the dialogue on disability looks at staying active with spinal cord and brain injuries.
Chipotle prides itself on its ingredients, like humanely raised pork, but the restaurant chain's high standards for suppliers might be out of reach.
They can find maybe a few hundred farmers who can do that. Can they find a few thousand farmers or tens of thousands to feed America?
The challenge for Chipotle later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon at 4 on WXXI.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, and this is the start of our Dialogue on Disability Week, the partnership between WXXI and the Al Siegel Community of Agencies in conjunction with the Herman and Margaret Schwartz Community Series, Dialogue on Disability supported in part by the Golisano Foundation with additional support from the Fred L. Emerson Foundation. Tomorrow night at the Little Theater, 6:30, they're going to be screening a film called On the Other Side of the Fence, and you can go to WXXI.org right now, check out the trailer. That 6:30 screening is free, and it will include the director, who will be there for the film as they talk about, some of the various issues that we're covering today. And let me introduce a couple more guests who have joined us in studio. Liz Flegheart and Rita Myers are here. They're from the Rochester Hearing and Speech Center, and it's great to see you both in studio. Thank you both for being here.
No problem.
Thank you.
Well, and let me jump in with early intervention. We've talked a little bit about, with Suzanne and some others, about the value of helping kids at an early age. And sometimes we throw around the word early intervention sort of monolithically. How early are we talking about for early intervention? What do you see?
Birth to three is early intervention.
Birth to three.
Yep.
So you're able to get in there and tell me about some of the work you do, especially at a very early age.
Well, Rochester Hearing and Speech Center provides services mostly for children from birth until the age of five. We also have early intervention programming specifically from birth through three. We have a multitude of disciplines providing those services. We have occupational therapy and physical therapy, speech therapy, special education. We have, specifically for early intervention, we have groups to provide those services, and in those groups the children would receive services in a multidisciplinary approach. We also provide those services in the home. So you'd have providers come out to parents' homes or families' homes, teaching parents new ways to work with their children to enhance their development. That would be the multitude of those services. A child might receive one service. They might receive multiple. It's all depending on their needs.
Some parents might be, I don't know, a little surprised to hear that as early as birth or right after, you can start to sort of make assessments. And because, I mean, I remember the maelstrom of being a new parent and all of the things that you're trying to deal with. But what are some of the questions that parents have and some of the issues that you work with?
Well, I mean, sometimes children, especially the ones that are treated so early on, are born with physical disabilities or born with a diagnosis at birth that the hospitals and the doctors at birth are diagnosing. Then just as the children are developing, a lot of the times it is physical therapy that starts in. The children aren't rolling over. They're not moving, not responding. A lot of times we'll get speech therapists in because they have children difficulties with feeding, with swallowing, that they're going to the doctors and getting some information there, and then they're referred to the early intervention system. And then they get an assessment, and based on the assessment of the evaluators that come into the home, determine what services at that time are necessary for the child.
It sounds like an obvious question, but I'm curious to know, what's the value and the importance of an early intervention when there are issues to be sort of discerned and worked on as opposed to waiting? I mean, do we see great advantages to getting in with early intervention?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So you're just providing a child with a professional who specializes in that area, giving parents different perspectives. We're always following the family's needs, but we're coming in with a new set of eyes and a new set of resources to help children achieve their full development. And to get them there more quickly, we always want to have kids ready for school, whatever schooling that might be. And just to give them that boost, a different set of eyes, supporting families, guiding. Parenting's not easy. And then to have a child with some needs or some differences, it's always nice to have support from someone that specializes in that area.
We had a question online from a mom who was concerned that education is still not adaptive enough to special needs, that kids are too often forced to take the same kind of tests or be evaluated the same way as they grew up. And I don't know if this mom who wrote the program is speaking from personal experience. I assume maybe. But can I ask our panel, and we'll kind of go around the room? I think it's a fair question. I mean, if we're doing a good job of trying to assess special needs, disabilities, et cetera. And we want to provide environments that are adaptive to those needs, as integrative as they can be. It's probably important that we don't sort of unfairly test, I guess. And again, I'm not an expert on New York systems. I know there's a bit of a can of worms and it can be a little political. But let me start with Rita and go around the room. Are we fair to kids? And is the system? Answer
well,
as best you can.
Question.
Yeah, I know.
Is there fairness? Every child is different.
Yeah, we
treat every child individually, and that's the importance of early intervention, that we get in as soon as possible, because it really has been proven that these children, the sooner we start working with them, we've just seen remarkable, incredible progress. And many of the children that go through our program end up going into the school system not needing any services at all, or we lessen the need for the amount of services they need once they get into the school system.
But is the testing, especially as we start to see standardized testing, is that fair?
It's hard to tell. It depends on the child. It depends what's happened to them in the past and the amount of therapy they've been getting. And parents definitely need to be advocates for their children. When we take these children to the school districts and to the meetings, that's what we work on in early intervention too. The providers, we work very closely with the parents, not just with the children, because we're helping the parents to understand how important it is to be an advocate for your child.
Liz, you have a chance to pass or take on that question if you want.
I'll be honest.
Yeah.
Again, we work with birth through 5-year-olds. I'm not working with a lot of these state tests that
are
going
on.
I'm working with the kids early on. And, you kind of have a feeling that this child might struggle later on. I'm seeing some little things that are popping up. And we always bring that up with the parents. We're seeing these little difficulties in letter recognition and whatnot. Make sure you watch that. Make sure their teachers know. I can't speak to if the tests are fair because I've never seen them, nor have I ever had to teach to them.
Sure.
I do a lot of standardized testing.
Okay.
I see kids all the way up through age 21 in our outpatient clinic also, and some through the school districts. The school districts do require testing. So once you get to be a 3-year-old, you have to qualify according to standardized testing. You have to have a 1.5 standard deviation delay if there's two areas of need, and at least a two standard deviation delay if there's one area of need. It's tough sometimes. There are always kids that probably still need some services, but according to the standardized testing, they're doing well. And that's where we need to talk to the parents about either getting retesting within 6 months' time, because you can retest at 6 months, or things to do at home. Integrated sports activities are a great thing to do since we're talking about integration. Get your child out there, and maybe they don't need more physical therapy or don't need physical therapy, but let's get out there and get involved in some of the sporting activities that Rochester offers for kids with special needs.
Suzanne, are you concerned as a parent about testing, et cetera?
I'm not really sure what direction the...
Well, here's a follow-up question, and you don't have to hit this at all, but Mary writes to us, I'll say it. I've tried to avoid this phrase, but Mary said it. I'll say it, Common Core is unfair to kids with various special needs. That worry you at all?
Common Core, I understand what she's saying now. I've gotten a little bit of a taste of that with my older daughter, Sarah, mm-hmm. who's typically developing. I don't even know if that will apply to Grace.
Right. So some kids it will, some it won't. Yeah.
Right.
Right.
She'll be in a special education program, and she will be learning in a very different way. So I can't really say it would apply to her.
Okay. Karen, you want to jump back in? Go ahead.
I've just been to some committee meetings, and as a parent, what you're going to need to do is try to get put on the IEP that your kid needs testing exemptions. They may need a small room. They may need a longer period of time. They may need breaks, things like that, to do testing. And just during the regular school year, there may be things that you may need an IEP for to get, or a 504 to get some special kind of things in place for your child so that they can learn to their best ability.
Yeah, Mary's saying her daughter has autism. And that may be a conversation for a separate day. But I know that I think Rita and Liz work with autism-related issues. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Liz.
Yeah, Rochester Hearing and Speech Center has actually recently developed both ABA programming and CERTS model programming for children with autism. And in those programs, we've developed teams in order to go out and best address children's needs based on the individual child. We also are able to provide those services in our, what we call our classroom, our developmental group programs. So we've really created a fluent way to service in the home and also in more of a structured school setting so that, you know, we're working with 2 and 3 year olds, they can more easily transition into maybe integrated programs that CP Rochester provides, or even going into some of the Head Starts or some of the other programming out there with a little lesser support. We're getting in a little bit earlier.
Now, some of our guests are quite well versed in speech language pathology, and Suzanne mentioned Grace, who's almost 5, mm-hmm. Still nonverbal. But can you give me a sense as a parent and what that process has been like? I mean, it's really remarkable. My brother's has worked in this field. I've got other family members who've worked in the field, and I'm always fascinated to know just some of the approaches to speech.
Okay. Well, right now her greatest ally is her iPad. And we're trying to use the technology as best we can to give her a voice. And she's really been doing a great job learning and being patient with us because it's a learning experience
sure.
for me as well. And
technologically?
Technologically, sure. Just trying to figure out, you know, the best way to present information to her so that she can come back and reply. I have to take a picture for giving her choices at lunch or dinner. And it's working well between the two of us. But it's certainly, challenging in itself.
Now, again, your older daughter is almost 9. Is that
almost 10?
Almost 10. Okay.
Yes.
Probably more proficient with technology in general than you are.
Yep.
Right. You know, it really is amazing.
Yeah.
Because kids who are growing up now, all the adults at this table, we are in the hybrid where we grew up mostly without a ton of technology every day, and we've had to learn how to adapt to it as adults. Kids growing up with it, it's sort of going to be in their DNA.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wonder if you feel with a typically developing child who's older, does she help at all with that?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
In fact, even little things like recording whatever the image is, you know, recording the actual words, we'll use her voice instead of mommy's voice because it's kind of strange to have a 4-year-old
yeah.
that's responding in an adult voice, you know. And Sarah just steps right up and joins right in and figures it out.
What is the difference in technology in terms of speech pathology as a field? It's just got to be a remarkable, I would think. This is one example of the ways that technology is helping us with speech pathology, yeah?
Correct. As a speech pathologist, our goal is to help children, people, everyone communicate at any cost. The goal is communication, and we will figure out how to enable communication in any manner we can. We're always looking for the least restrictive, most natural communication method, but technology it's come so far in providing not only more functional and easily used communication, also at a lower cost, but it's more natural. And just as you were speaking about Grace, we don't want her having an adult voice.
Right.
She's a child, yeah. And she knows that.
Yeah.
It's communication, it's going to, decrease frustration. That's what we all live for, is to communicate and talk and to let people know what we need. Both parents letting their kids know what they need. And we use communication devices that way as well to help children understand. And then also for the children to understand. So, you know, we've come a long way from big clunky voice generating devices to these iPads and different methods that way. Now, usually when we're working with our little guys, we're using more of paper communication. So pictures.
That.
Yeah, we're introducing it. You don't usually want to give most of the 2-year-olds we work with iPads. It can get a little rough, but that's the goal. It's the goal is to be where Grace is and where Grace is going.
Well, and Greg writes to us, he sends an email that trying to sort of condense as I scribble my notes and can't even read them. Has a child with special needs and went through a lot as a parent to understand what help was available. We mentioned groups. Can we talk more about what groups we're talking about? Rita, you're a special education teacher, the lead teacher in the early
yes.
intervention developmental groups?
Yes.
So talk a little bit more about the groups we're talking
about. The groups we run, I oversee the group. It's led by the special education teacher, and it's an interdisciplinary approach. So it's myself, and I've got Liz in one of my classrooms, special education, speech therapy, occupational therapy, physical therapy. We also have a classroom assistant. We have children starting as young as 20 to 22 months old, mm-hmm. and they can stay with us through their third birthday once they transition out of the early intervention system into the preschool special education system. So they can stay with us through that early intervention time. We run our group up to 5 days a week. It's a 2-hour group per day. These are children who are already receiving early intervention services or are just assessed and approved to receive early intervention services, and sometimes the need is there that they've got so many therapies needed, they put them into the group with us. Our group runs 2 hours a day, and within that group, we're working, all the therapists work together, and we kind of really overlap on the skills that we're teaching them. Everybody's helping each other do each other's jobs because we're working with these children and trying to bring them, you know, into the world and help them communicate and attend and interact. And children with motor needs and sensory needs, that's where the occupational therapy comes in. We just all work together to really push the child through and help them to be the most independent and successful as they can.
Until their third birthday. So, mm-hmm. And again, every child's different, but I imagine you see quite a lot of change at times from 22 months, for example, to 36 months.
Absolutely. We've seen, and children come into our groups with different varying levels of abilities. Mm-hmm. Most of our children are nonverbal, and we've gotten a lot of them to be a little bit more verbal, or we're getting them onto the pathway to assistive technology devices. They are really young, and they're just coming in. And, you know, these children are typically not in classrooms when they're 2 years old, typically developing children. So this is, you know, being away from home, being away from the family. And it is not a parent-child group. So these children are here without their families. And just working them through that.
Liz, when you talk to parents like Suzanne, whose children have varying levels of ability or disability when it comes to speech, I imagine the hard part is that there's no single way to approach it that always works. And works is sort of it's a relative term anyway. But I guess that's part of your job, right? I mean, understanding and assessing that, you know, some people, sometimes you will see results in a short term, sometimes in the middle term, sometimes you won't break through, but that's got to be difficult at times.
Correct. Yeah, when we meet a family and, you know, when I go into a home, one of the first things I always say is, you know your child best, and I'm here to work with you and mm-hmm. your child and your entire family. We're going to figure out a way to help your child communicate, whether it's verbally, whether it's through pointing. If we're not even there yet, if we're going to work on joint attention, you know, a lot of the children I do work with have a lot of motoric delays still, and that's going to greatly impact future speech. So I'm working with the PTs and the OTs, and we're all one big team. Whether they're in our group or not in our group, we're working directly with the families as a team. These kids, you know, we see kids for maybe 2% of their waking hours if they're just getting a home service. It's vital that the family knows what to do and how to promote their children's success. I'm going to give them tips, but I'm just going to keep trying until we get somewhere.
Jennifer called the program. A listener just wanted to say all three kids went to the preschool. I assume they mean the CP Rochester preschool, said it was a wonderful experience. So we have a thumbs up there and some nice comments online. I want to make sure that we wrap the hour in our dialogue on disability with letting our listeners know once again what resources are out there. So Rita, listeners who don't know what is available, et cetera, real briefly, where would you direct somebody?
Start at 753 Kids. That's the phone number for Monroe County Early Intervention Services. You can give those folks a call, explain your situation, your thoughts about what's going on with your child, and they can get you rolling.
And another endorsement from a caller, Mary just called in to say it's a wonderful program for children with special needs, and she raves about the relationship with the teachers as well as the peer-to-peer interaction. So that's a great endorsement there. Karen, what would you want people to know about what's out there?
We also have an early intervention group that's a group of two-year-olds. It's Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday mornings from 9:30 until noon. And if somebody is thinking about coming to CP Rochester for a tour for the group early intervention group or the 3 and 4 year old preschool, you could call 585-334-6000 and hit 0 for the operator and ask her to send you to the person in the preschool.
Suzanne, any final thoughts from you about what you'd want other parents to know?
Honestly, I think I'd just like to thank all of the people here today, because without your assistance, without you choosing the job that you do, my daughter wouldn't be progressing the way she is today. So thank you.
I see someone muttering down the hall right now. Yeah. There goes Grace. Suzanne, you got a beautiful family story, and I really appreciate you being here. Thank you.
Thank you.
Karen from CP Rochester, thank you for taking the time to be here. And Liz and Rita, thank you so much. It's nice to have you here as well and sharing your expertise. Thanks for taking the time.
Thank you.
And for all of our listeners today, much more conversation and dialogue on disability happening this week on WXXI, our partnership with the Al Siegel Community of Agencies in conjunction with the Herman and Margaret Schwartz Community Series, supported by the Golisano Foundation with additional support from the Fred L. Emerson Foundation. I'm Evan Dawson. This is Connections on member-supported public radio.